Hey guys, no intro. At the time I'm recording this, it's Black Friday morning, so I hope everybody's having an awesome holiday weekend. I thought that this was the weekend to drop a bonus on you. This was the weekend to give you a little extra content. If you're going to be driving around, maybe going to relatives' house, maybe you save this until you're driving home from your vacation. Whatever it is, it's a bonus show, but this one is specifically wrestling action figure oriented. So if you're not into wrestling toys, then this might not be the one for you. But what I want you to do is, if you're at all interested in wrestling toys, give it a listen. Tweet me at NotSam, Facebook message me at NotSam, and let me know if this is a topic that you're interested in. If you'd like to see Bill McKenna on more shows, you know, I'm considering talking to Bill on a semi-regular basis about everything that's going on over at Mattel. So let me know if that's something you want. If you want me to talk to superstars maybe about their collections, if you want me to get more into it with Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins and guys like that about their action figure collections, let me know if that's something. If you want me to pull out the guys from Ringside Collectibles and talk to them about how they got to where they are, let me know if that's something you'd want to hear. If you want me to drop maybe, you know, one a month, one a quarter, whatever it is, just little bonus shows that are collector-focused, you let me know. In the meantime, Bill McKenna is on the is on this podcast, this special bonus podcast. And Bill McKenna is the head designer for Mattel's Elite Collection division. He's been kind of the face of Mattel's WWE division for all of us fans for a long time. And I'm a huge fan of Mattel's WWE line. I've been collecting it since the beginning, the basics, the elites, and now the retros as well. I think they've done such a good job on almost everything. There's been a few things here and there that I'm like, meh, you know, and some of the more kid-focused stuff, it's not for me. I don't think it's a bad job. It's just not for me. But the stuff they're doing, especially with the Elites line, the stuff that they're coming out with this year, like every year, it just gets more and more exciting what they're doing. And I thought to myself, self, how does Bill McKenna get to the place that he's at? How do you get to be a guy who designs WWE action figures? Because as a kid, you know, I've been a wrestling figure fan for a long time. When I was 12, I had a wrestling figure newsletter on AOL that I sent out to, like, I think I ended up with like 500 subscribers or something. And every Sunday I'd sit down and I'd type away and write my wrestling figure newsletter. When I was 14 or 15, I had a business where I was selling custom accessories for wrestling action figures online. And I'm not artistically talented, so they were no good, and it was not a successful business. But the point is, I did it because I was making accessories for myself, and I started selling them online. I made custom figures, I had a federation, I did the whole thing. And then, after I was done kind of, you know, actively playing with wrestling figures, just because it happens, I never stopped buying. I buy more now than I ever did when I was a kid. It really is incredible. It's a question to me how one becomes it, because I'll bet when I was a kid, I would have considered saying, hey, I'd like to become a wrestling action figure designer. And how does one get to be there? And who is the guy that makes these choices and gets inspired to make these things? So I thought that Black Friday was a good time to drop this show. It's Bill McKenna, a bonus collector-focused interview on Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. Let's go straight to it. No production. So there's a lot of elements about wrestling that I like, and one of them forever has been wrestling figures. I don't know, it's just something, especially with WWE, I feel like it's something that's been associated with them forever. That's why today I have a special guest in studio. Bill McKenna is, what's your official title with Mattel?
I am a designer on the WWE action figure line. The official designation is project designer, but it's I design all the elite action figures for Mattel, and also our customized offerings, and also various other toys in the line.
So you just do the elite ones though, pretty much?
Right now I'm at the elite. Up until last year I was designing the basics, the two packs, the elites, you know, just every like 6 to 7 inch scale figure in the line, and the workload just got to be a little overwhelming.
I mean, that's one of the things about Mattel lately has been the output is incredible. I was thinking about it because I grew up with Hasbros. That was my generation. It was like, you know, LJNs were around, but I was kind of young for that. So like Hasbros were the first line that I could really sink my teeth into. And back then it was like a wave of five or six figures would come out every like 4 months or so. And that would be it. Like if there was a Tito Santana in that line, that was
that was the Tito Santana. And that was the
figure.
Only Tito you were going to get from Hasbro. So,
and it was also because it was before the internet. It was one of those things where you just show up in a store and it's like, oh my God, there's new figures. Yeah. They're here. And it was, the hunt was part of it. You're a fan. Right?
Yeah, I've been a wrestling fan since right after the first WrestleMania I started watching. So I missed like the first WrestleMania, but like, you know, everything sort of like in the months after that leading up to WrestleMania 2, I started getting really into it.
Right.
And it's funny because as a kid, I never actually bought a wrestling action figure.
Really?
The first wrestling action figure I ever bought was a Kamala Hasbro on clearance at KB when they had like a whole sort of, they were clearing out all the Hasbro figures like 2 or 3 years after Hasbro lost the license.
Oh, can you, by the way, as a figure guy, like everybody out there who's a figure guy, just imagine getting to go into a KB and all the Hasbros are on clearance.
Yeah, that was the day I decided, like, you know what, I'm probably going to buy at least a Kamala. And then like once I bought the Kamala, I was like, well, if the other ones are like on clearance, you know, like $3 for $10, it's like I should probably get a few more. And then you get a few more and then suddenly it's like you got like, you know, shelving units full of these things. It's like, oh my God, what happened?
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. You I think everybody around you too assumes that at some point you're going to stop. But then I think I was talking about it. We were at Ringside Fest and you guys were putting out a whole bunch of new product. And every time, like, there are moments where I'm like, you know what? I got a good collection. Let me slow down. Let me not buy everything that comes out. Let me relax with this stuff. And then you'll put out something obscure or just something that looks really cool. And I'm like, now I'm going to end up buying that whole set. So I might as well just keep going.
Yeah, it is an addiction and it's like, it is a disease. Like if you ever have people that collect anything, like, you know, once the hooks are in, it's like you're in. And, you know, I've been lucky enough that like my collection has sort of turned into my career now. So before I was a designer on WWE action figures, I was actually collecting them, you know, pretty substantially. I bought like all the Jacks. I have almost a complete run of the Hasbros. I have almost a complete run of the old AWA
Remcos.
I have quite a bit of Jacks still left. I have some Charo Pro figures from Japan.
Wow.
So
all right. So you find the Hasbros on clearance in KB,
mm-hmm.
and it kind of hooks you in, and you start getting worked up into it. I would imagine that action figure designing was not something that was a career prospect for you at that point in your life.
No, at that point in my life, I was in college and sort of like didn't really have like an idea of what I wanted to do.
I love that, by the way, that like, yeah, I didn't start collecting WWE action figures till college. Like, yeah. that's perfect.
I don't know. There's a lot of stories now of people my age, like that's when they started toy collecting.
It's yeah.
Like you get like a little bit of disposable income and like you're that age, it's like, well, why not just, you know, wrestling action figures.
I have a buddy who's in his who works with me. He's in his late 20s,
mm-hmm.
and you know, we're looking at the new stuff you guys have coming out, and he's like, I've never had a wrestling figure before. I was like, oh yeah? And he's like, but I think I'm gonna buy that James Ellsworth. I was like, I don't know why, but I think I'm gonna do that. And I'm like, yeah, that's how it happens. So okay, so you're in college.
Yeah, and I lived in Deerfield, Illinois at the time, and Walgreens corporate offices are there, and I would spend my summers cleaning there as a summer job, and I sort of really liked the company at the time, was like really growing well, so I'm like, I could see myself, you know, having a career here. So I got into like a store management program there, where I would, like, you know, assistant manager at a store, and you know, you work your way up to manager, and then eventually if you're a good enough manager, they, you know, you could work at corporate. I'm like, that seems like a, you know, solid career plan. The company is growing really well. It's local. It's
path is yeah. in front of you. It's yeah.
And about a year in, I was like, I just don't want to do this. Like, I can't see myself doing this for the rest of my life. And I have so much respect for the people that can do that. But mm-hmm. it's just like, I could not do that. So I was like, at that point, it's like, you're kind of entering adulthood and you have with no path. And it's like, well, you should probably try to figure out like what you want to do.
Yeah.
So, I decided, you know, I'm not like a great artist by any means, but I consider myself like a serviceable artist. Like, okay. I can get an idea across with pen and paper. Like, I'm not someone that's going to be able to like
But you can give it to an artist and say, this is what I need it to look like.
I can
like,
present an idea that is clear and cogent, and you can follow along with what it is, but I'm not going to dazzle you with, like, you know, a comic book level style of rendering and illustration. We have people at Mattel that can do that, and, like, I don't even know how they do it.
Doesn't it just blow your mind when you meet somebody that can draw really well?
And fast. When they can draw well and fast.
I'm like, that's one of those, ever since I'm a kid, like, that's a talent that I would love to have, just the ability. Because it's one of those things that I don't think, you can learn to draw better, but being like a great artist is not, it's just some kind of connection between your brain and your hand that just translates. It always blows my mind.
Yeah. I mean, we have people that I work with that are just like, gosh, I wish I had their talent.
Yeah.
I'm doing okay now, so I'm just, don't ruin it.
You're good. Right. So you've got serviceable
art skills, and I always, you know, at the time I was still collecting toys. I was, you know, I had like a, you know, Star Wars, G.I. Joe when I was a kid. I had a bunch of those collections. At this point, I was starting to accumulate a lot of wrestling action figures and also the Marvel figures that Toy Biz was putting out at the time. So yeah, I think everyone my age like remembers those days fondly and looks back. It's like, oh, those were like almost like, you know, KB was still around. Yep. Used to Kmart was still a huge force. Obviously all the places were like booming, whereas now I think things are getting a little centralized with toy, at least brick and mortar toy distribution.
I mean, when Toys R Us is in trouble, you know the business is changing.
Yeah, it's a little scary.
So when you start to get into the action figure game, are you like, yeah, wrestling is where I want to go? Because obviously you're a wrestling fan. Or are you like, whatever, I just think
I decided, cool, like, I sent out, I wanted to go to school for toy design. I wanted to be a toy designer. I decided, I have some artistic skill. I love toys. Why don't I see how far I can go with this? Because, if it doesn't go anywhere, at least I tried.
Sure.
And then, you know, I can, you know,
go back to Walgreens.
Yeah. Or something similar.
If you have to. Yeah.
And so I applied to, and there was two companies I applied to just out of the blue, and I sent them resumes and some art samples, and the art samples were just like, you know, like really amateur. Like there was no way I was going to get hired. But one was Toy Biz because I wanted to work on Marvel Legends.
Sure.
And one was Jax because I wanted to work on the WWF line at the time.
Which, by the way, you know, no offense to anybody at Jax or anything, but if this is like 96, I don't think you had to be a great artist to design Jax's bone-crunching line.
No, this was actually 99 where I think they were transitioning out of the bone-crunching line, but there was nowhere... The level of the sophistication isn't what it is now. Like the sophistication they had at the end before we took over and then like, what we've done, like the level wasn't there. But I just like the idea of you know, wrestling action figures at the time. I just thought it was really cool. So I applied, and I heard back from a lady that worked at Toy Biz recommending that I go to a toy design school in New York called Fashion Institute of Technology.
Sure, FIT. I didn't realize they had a toy department in
FIT.
They
have a small adjunct department for toy design.
That's but great.
It's kind of, it was amazing. So I applied there and didn't get in. And then I realized that what I gave wasn't good enough, but what do I do? So next time I apply, it's a yes. So I got the advice. I took some illustration courses. And then 2 years later, I applied again. And this time I got in. So I was like, it was great. I mean, I loved going there. I mean, I'm sort of strange in the three cities that I've lived in terms of, you know, the closest metropolitan areas are the three largest ones in the U.S., New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been around, like, big U.S. cities, and I enjoy being, you know, having access to, like, large U.S. cities.
Yeah.
So I went to school there, and I graduated. And I did okay. But when I got out of school, there was not a lot of toy jobs. This was, you know, September 11th happened the second week that I was in toy design school.
Oh.
So that was a little ominous.
Yeah, sure.
You know, for a bunch of reasons, not the least of which the economy kind of tanked well in the aftermath. So when I got out of school...
People aren't really spending recreationally on anything at that point, let alone toys.
Yeah, it was kind of like, I got to save in case something happens.
Yeah.
So that was a little... Yeah, like, it was not like the... So I got out of school for toy design, and there was no jobs. Mm-hmm. I mean, some people in class got placed out of school, and I was one of those that wasn't placed, and it was like, oh boy, now what? And
this is every turn for you, man. Every turn, it's like, hey, can I get a job? No, you got to go to school. Hey, can I get into school? No, you're not good enough. Okay, now can I get into school? Yeah, but you can't have a job. Like every...
Yeah, so for a year after that, I was living at home and back at Walgreens, you know, just trying, you know, just get money to, you know, to live off of. And it was kind of, you know, it was tough. I mean, it was not where I wanted to be. And it's no offense against, I mean, Walgreens was a great company, you know, to, they were very helpful and like taken me back when I left.
Needed it.
Yeah. Right. So, but then I got a job with a toy licensing firm in Aurora, Illinois, but that was like a 50-mile commute there and back every day, and there really wasn't a lot for me to do there.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a foot in the door. So I was always appreciative that like they took a chance on me, and I was able to get some experience there. And then I left there and went to like a toy invention firm in Chicago, and I worked there for about 2.5 years, and I got some more experience. And so that in 2008, my friend who works for Topps, he invited me to stay with him when he went to San Diego Comic Con. He said I could crash in his room if I could get tickets and an airfare. And this was back like 2 weeks before Comic Con. You could still get tickets to the show.
Right.
The Saturday was sold out, but I got tickets for the Friday and the Sunday sessions. Friday session, I'm walking around, you know, and Keith Giffen was signing in the Mattel booth. And Keith Giffen is one of my favorite comic book artists and writers. And he was signing a Mattel Lobo action figure. And it's like, well, I'm definitely buying that and getting that signed.
Yeah.
So I do that. I get it signed. And as I turn around, there's a big Help Wanted poster in their booth, like Help Wanted ringside. We're looking for toy designers with a vast and encyclopedic knowledge of WWE. And I'm looking at this poster and I'm like, I think they're looking for me.
Like, is this a sign?
Yeah. Like, yeah. This is like the luckiest break I'd ever gotten.
Right.
So I was like frantically looking around the booth, like trying to find like, where's the Mattel person? Can I ask about this? Like, I want to know, you know, how can I apply for this? And luckily I ran into someone who told me to get in touch with him when I got back to Chicago. And I sent out a resume and some a portfolio right away. And they contacted me about 2 weeks later to set up an interview. And I flew out there about a week later. And then about 2 weeks after that, they offered me a position.
And now you got the gig. Now you got the dream job. That's amazing.
I realize that I'm incredibly lucky, because if I didn't run into that sign at the Comic-Con, like, I never would have gotten this job.
But it's also a lot of things. It's also like, if you hadn't reapplied after the school told you no, if you hadn't applied to the school after the company told you no, if you hadn't found this job that maybe wasn't perfectly ideal when there weren't any jobs out there. Like, there's lots of kind of steps that you had to take to get there.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like, I was very lucky, but I was also I put myself in a position to capitalize when a lucky break presented itself.
Exactly, right. So, because that's what they say, right? Luck is where preparation meets opportunity.
Yeah, it definitely applies in my case.
Yeah.
But
So I was thinking about it, and like, it's really funny, because I remember when Mattel first got the license, it was the first time that the rollout had been kind of seamless, in the sense that Jax was still, you know, you kind of knew it was the end and stuff was kind of trickling out, but Mattel announced that January 1st, whatever year it was.
2010 was.
January 1st, 2010. And I was out there. I was able to find some of the stuff on shelves like a week before New Year's. I found the Santino Beth Phoenix 2-pack. I'll always remember that at the Target.
Yeah, stuff like, always slips street day.
But
stuff.
I did go out on New Year's Day in the morning and start finding like Series 1 and Series 1 Elite and all this stuff. And I thought it was great. And I've been a fan of the line literally ever since. At no point have I not been. How do you guys determine how much stuff to put out? Because, like, for instance, with the retro line, which is my, mm-hmm. I mean, probably my favorite thing as a Hasbro guy that you guys have done, because it's perfect. But I look at it and it goes, okay, obviously the first series got a great reception.
Yeah.
And the second series is tough to find, so it must be a great mm-hmm. reception as well. But it seemed like, okay, the first series went well. We can push forward the second line. And then the next thing you know, you've got like what looks like a whole year's worth of retro figures now all ready to go. And I'm in my head, I'm going like, I'm excited as a fan. But then as a business person, I'm going, well, how do I know this is going to go beyond series 3? Like, how are we already ready for a whole year of these things?
Retros is something that originally was supposed to be, and I may be speaking out of school saying this, but
yeah.
It was supposed to be just like 6 figures and done, just like a quick something for Walmart as a...
That first six.
Yeah, those first six. And then I was constantly in the background, you know, when these decisions were being made, like, there's so much more potential for these. People are going to go nuts when they see these. Just trust me on this. They people are going to love these. And there was still a little hesitation. And I think when we showed them at Comic-Con last year, where we showed a bunch of new products, but like 80% of the social feedback was about the retros. It's like, okay, you know, I think there is potential here to expand it. So that was the point where we took it from, you know, just something that we were going to do for a large client to we can go mainline with this and, you know, sort of increase our expectations for it.
Yeah. And that's when you start developing like, no, let's do a year of this stuff. Yes. And see what happens. So what are the choices there? Because Retro Series 1 was Warrior in the same color as the original Hasbro, mm-hmm. but a different position, like different body.
Yeah.
And then Undertaker, Brock, you know, Kevin Owens, Roman Reigns, John Cena. I noticed in the figures that are coming out,
mm-hmm.
nothing is a repeat from Hasbro's. It's almost vast majority is modern, current day roster yeah. guys. And then there are a few legends scattered in, like a Sting or like an NWA Ric Flair, mm-hmm. but nothing old school Hasbro era WWF. Is this intentional on your part? Is it so we don't repeat, or is it a bigger issue than that?
I'm not sure. I was the designer on the second series of them, the six that were sort of from the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
So I'm not 100% privy to the decision making on the next waves. But I think there is a combination of we want to sort of like put get new talent out there.
Yeah.
You know, if there is something that Hasbro did, you know, it's not like that we won't redo it, but there's other people that we probably want to get to first, because if you have, let's just say you have the Hasbro collection and you have, you know, $1 million man in the collection, and they gave you, I think, like three choices.
Yeah, three of them, yeah.
So if you're someone that's, you know, wants to like add to that collection, you're probably not going to focus on that one as
another
opposed
million
to,
dollar
you
man.
Know, another, you know, like if we did the Usos or something, just
especially because the goal of the Retro line is not to be hyper realistic, it's to be more like the Hasbro's were.
It's to fit in alongside that, whereas if you never collected them, it's to be sort of like, you know, it was a cool form factor,
yeah,
that obviously there's a lot of attachment to it based off of how well they've sold. Like people, I think people didn't realize how much they missed them until they were back.
Yeah.
And so now that they're back, it's like, okay, this is great. So.
And it's almost like it's really weird. Like for me, there's little things. Like there'll be a little bit of added articulation, and I'll almost go, well, they didn't have – I wish it was less articulation. Like yeah. I wish it was even more bare bones basic.
Yeah. And there's a new – like there's one mechanism that's coming out that was never on the Hasbro's. When you look at it, so it's like, well, why was this never used?
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It
yeah,
makes
yeah.
so much sense. It's,
yeah. Yeah. So you weren't a part of designing the ring then?
No.
The Retro ring.
No, the Retro ring. No. It's the six that I was responsible for were the Sting, the Triple H, the Stone Cold, Rock, Mankind, and Kane.
Do you have any idea when that Retro ring comes out?
I believe it's next year.
Yeah.
I don't know the exact street date.
And is it going to, for Retros going forward, is it like just we're putting them out like any other line? Or are they going to be paired off in exclusives? And
I think the plan is for them to be available to all mass retailers, and for every character to be available to every retailer.
What is the thing that you've done, that you've designed, that you've passed through? Because there's stuff that you guys get out that I like, love. I love what's going on now. I was talking about it on my podcast before. Like I love that there's an Isaac Yankem figure.
Yeah,
and like I love those little things, the Shockmaster figure with the packaging the way it is. Like mm-hmm. I have now a section of Wrestle Crap. On my shelf, that's like these are, because you would never think that these would get made, and the packaging is like perfect and everything. But for you, what are you most proud of that you've gotten through? Because Mattel is a giant company, WWE is a giant company, and you know there are certainly interests involved that aren't exactly like as a collector. Of course, I just say like. We'll make a Duke the Dumpster Drossy with a trash can. He can come up with a garbage truck.
Yeah,
and he can do all, and it's like it doesn't make sense. You would be the only one who would buy that, Sam. But the two of us would be the only ones that would buy them. But what's been the thing that you're most proud of getting through and getting onto shelves?
The figure that I'm most proud of, I guess, and just because of the whole story involved, the first defining moments, Macho Man Randy Savage.
With the white jacket,
yeah. With the fringe. Like, that'll always be, like, every time I look at that, like, because everything about that figure is so special because it was, like, the first time in, like, 14 years, I think,
Yeah, I mean, sometimes people forget what a big deal that was because there have been so many Macho Man since then.
Yeah.
But Jax couldn't get...
Jax never had the right to do him. WWE had no relationship with right. Macho Man at that point. I mean, and so we put out a list when we first got the license of, like, you know, people that we wanted to pursue to go put in the line. This was back when Mattel was signing, you know, merchandise deals directly with some of the wrestlers, the superstars, and we put Macho Man on the list as like a, you know, let's see if we're allowed to pursue this, you know, thinking, you know, there's no way that it would, because at that point it was almost like he was persona non grata, and you know,
yeah,
and but we sent the list and it was approved to pursue him. Like they're allowing us to go after him. We got to go after him, and so we had our licensing team, you know, talk to his representatives, and then one day I got an email saying like, we got Macho Man, and I'm like, you know, can we swear on this?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, it's like,
yeah.
Holy shit! Like, we're gonna be able, I'm gonna be working on Macho Man action figures, and it's like you're sitting in your cube, and it's just like, this is unreal.
Right.
It's like, you know, I get to start. I can now go to WWE and ask for Macho Man reference because I'm gonna be working on his action figures.
I mean, you could make a defining moment series of just Macho Man defining.
Yeah,
moments.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, he's got so many different looks and so many different outfits, and the funny thing is, like, you could put out 100 and you'll never please anyone because it'll always be like. That one guy who just that one outfit he always remembers, and he's like, why have they never made that outfit?
Yeah. So and so that's got to be surreal when you're like, I'm working on a Macho Man.
That was surreal, and it got even more surreal because about 9 months later, they were going to announce the figure at the 2011 comic. Is it 2000?
Probably. If you started in 20...
I think it was... it might have been the 2010 Comic-Con. Yeah, it's 2010 Comic-Con, which is 2 years... After I went to Comic-Con to land, you know, and found the flyer. I'm on a panel at Comic-Con with a little nameplate in front of me, and I'm just like, this is unreal. Like, how does this ever happen?
Yeah, yeah.
And we're announcing, we were going to have a video of Macho Man announcing the figure, mm-hmm. and there was just going to be a marketing guy flying down to Florida to tape it at his house, and then my director at the time got me added to the trip to go visit because he wanted to make sure that there was someone who really knew WWE on there so we didn't embarrass him. Because if we have a, and so it was like, oh my god, like I'm gonna fly down to meet Macho Man. It's like, again, this is like, how the hell does this happen?
Right.
And so we were given strict instructions on the, you know, for the meeting. It was like, you got 1 hour, you know, you're in, you're out, you tape your stuff, you pack up and go home. And it's like, okay, that's fine. You know, we're just here to do a job. So we fly in that morning, mm-hmm. and we drive to his house, which was out in the suburbs of Tampa. And mm-hmm. it's like, you're pulling up the driveway. It's like all you're thinking. It's like, I'm going to Macho Man's home.
Yeah.
You know, in about a minute, I'm going to meet Macho Man. And this is a point when, like, he was kind of, you know, not really a public figure. He was...
Yeah, the video, the action figure and the video game that all kind of came around the same time was... the only acknowledgement that WWE had made of him in years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, we get out of the car and he walks out of his house and it's like, oh my God. And then we shake hands. The first thing he says is, well, I'm that busy. We got all day if you want. And it's like, holy shit, this is so cool. And so we set up the video and he's like, he's displaying the figure and talking about the details and how great it is.
I'm Does he like it?
Oh, he loved it.
Yeah.
Like, he loved it. And I'm just sitting here, it's like, this is Macho Man Randy Savage. You know, complimenting something that I created. Like, how the hell you get to a position in life where this happens?
Yeah.
Like, I still haven't figured this out. Like, I still kind of, like, I cannot believe that happened.
When you see that figure for the mm-hmm. first time, were you kind of blown away, too, that everything was, like, because in your head, you have this image of what it could be.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, like, I think, you know, growing up, we all have images of, wouldn't it be cool if this figure had this and this figure had that? But, like, that defining moments line was the first time that I think that those figures that are in our heads start to actually look like, oh, my God, that's, like, the jacket actually looks like it would fit him, and there's real streamers, and it's a fabric mm-hmm. jacket, and the hat, and the thing. Like, do you look at that like, oh, my God, we did it?
Kind of, yeah. It's funny because the first samples you get from the factory, like the first production samples, sometimes there's, you know, things that need to be corrected. So the first time I got the figure, the tone of purple was a little off. So when the first time I saw it, I was actually a little bit disappointed. It's like, oh, this isn't it. So you have to go back and tweak it and have them use a different Pantone color.
Yeah.
So, but like when you see it finally completed and packaged with everything assembled, everything's proper, and they ship you the sample to evaluate, and you open it up, and it's like, oh, this is so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, was there any? Did Macho Man have Macho Man stuff in his house, or was it just a normal house?
It was pretty normal from what I saw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always funny. I mean, the first time I went into Stone Cold Steve Austin's house, I don't remember if we talked about it because we were recording a podcast, and I was like, "There's no Stone Cold Steve Austin stuff anywhere." He's like, "We got two things. One is a Got Milk poster that he likes because Annie Lieberman did the photo for it. So that's hanging up. And the other one is in the kitchen. It's a Stone Cold cookie jar. Other than that, there's no wrestling stuff in the house. And I'm like, that's so badass.
Yeah. I think he, he's, cause, after we shot the video,
yeah.
We had like a couple hours before we had the fly out. Mm-hmm. And so he invited us to just stay in his sunroom and just like talk and shoot the breeze and drink beer. And it was like,
you got to talk to him about wrestling.
Yeah. And it was, you know, I'm sitting in his sunroom with his wife, who at the time he just like the childhood sweetheart.
Sure.
Just like remarried like a month earlier.
Yeah.
So we're sitting in the sunroom. I mean, they were the sweetest people. I mean, they were the nicest people.
And they seem happy.
They were so happy. I mean, it makes it all the more tragic what happened like less than a year later. It was like, I mean, when I heard that at work, I was like, I literally was, I could not work. I was like, I may have cried a little because it was just like, God, he seems so happy. And you hear all the stories about like what a tumultuous life. And it's like he finally, it's like based off of what, like the limited exposure I had, it's like, this guy has it figured out. And it was so happy. And then it's like, it was like, it seemed like it was all like just snatched away like so quickly.
The only positive thing about it is that at least he goes out on top, right?
Oh,
like at least he
doesn't.
Yeah,
and at least it's not like the slow slide into oblivion that could have happened, but.
So, you get, as Mattel, you being Mattel, you get Macho Man, which was like the first really big, like, okay, this is going to be a different deal. Because if I remember right, when you guys first started putting Legends out, it was pretty quick in.
Yeah.
And they didn't do great, but a lot of that was because Jax had kind of inundated everybody with the classic line. Like, it was such a vast line.
Yeah.
That there wasn't much you could do in that space.
Yeah, it was a hard, Jax was an extremely hard act to follow. I mean, they were so thorough with their releases, and they
ended so strong.
Yeah, and and like we look back, it's like there are certain, I mean, there are Jax figures that's like I'm jealous because like I'm never going to be able to do, you know, a character on this likely. It's like I'm probably never going to do an Abdul the Butcher.
Right.
And it's like, God, I'm so jealous that like Jax got to do an Abdul the Butcher and I can't do like my version of Abdul.
I love Jax's Andy Kaufman figure.
Yeah, exactly. And there's so much, it's like almost a unique tool and everything. And that figure's great. And it's like,
got the neck brace on and everything.
Like that's something that's like, we're probably not going to do that.
Right. Right. Yeah. But so you get Macho Man though. And that was like that first figure that was like, okay, Mattel is really, this is the real deal now.
Yeah.
So you end up getting Macho Man. You get Bret Hart.
Yeah, we got Warrior.
Warrior, Hogan at the time.
Ricky Steamboat, which at the time was like also another
person. Oh, yeah, there hadn't been a Ricky Steamboat.
There hadn't been a Ricky Steamboat in, you know, I don't think Jax ever touched him. So we got the rights to him, so we were able to put him in our first Legends wave.
Then you get Sting.
Yeah.
Which is huge.
Razor Ramon.
Right.
We had Hogan for a bit, and then we lost him again.
So. Yeah. Hopefully you'll get that back at some point. There've got to be all these. So before I get to my point, is Hogan, because I noticed that with the Hardys back now, I saw the new product you guys have coming out include what looked like was supposed to come out originally before Jeff left.
Yeah, it's sort of a cheat, but it's gonna be a WWE shop exclusive, and it's the packaging is gonna look like the launch packaging, like the 2010 era packaging.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Now I'm gonna have to order two.
Yeah. I did my job. The idea is that, like, you know, because I think everyone knows that's followed our lines. Like, we're gonna launch in 2010, and then before that happened, you know, Jeff Hardy was, you know, left WWE and had some. We still got the okay from WWE. It's like you can go forward with like what you've already produced, and then he got in some legal issues, then suddenly it's like, yeah, just ixnay everything. So there was stuff that was produced which sort of trickled out, unfortunately, into the aftermarket.
Yeah.
And then afterwards,
only a few of them trickled out, though.
Enough trickled out to where it's sort of just, you hear stories like, yeah, I was able to find that one. It's like, well, you kind of shouldn't have gotten that.
Yeah, you weren't supposed to. Now, what do they do with, like, obviously it was mass produced. Are they destroyed? Are they in a warehouse somewhere? You don't know?
I honestly don't know.
Yeah.
There's a whole section of Mattel that's devoted to logistics stuff like that. Like, my job is just to make sure this stuff like
looks cool.
Looks like what looks like what you see on TV. We can replicate it in a much smaller form.
But so so there are cheats there. There were plans there for Jeff and everything, and now you're able to see those. Should things work out with Hogan? Should Mattel get that license back, and he, you know, WWE starts doing stuff with him again? Are there like a ton of Hogans that are like, okay, right back to where we were?
There is some stuff that was in the works that was sort of dropped and moved on from. So there is some stuff we could pick up right back up and go like, okay, let's.
When you see that Hogan that Japanese company put out, the Hollywood Hogan mm-hmm. that came out recently, are you like, ah, like why would you put out a
I'm a little jealous that they were able to do it and yeah. we're not. But I also think like, you know, if and when the day comes that the people that bought that one will now want the official version. Like,
right.
I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't think Mattel's losing money by that being out there.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. But it does. I mean, that's a super detailed figure, so it does put you guys at a high standard.
Well, everything that's come before puts me at a high standard. Like,
yeah.
I always, because I have so many collections and I've seen what people have done before uh-huh. and what they've done well. I'm trying to build off that and, you know, improve on that. Like, I want to be able to produce the best version of a character that's ever been done.
Yeah,
because I have. You know, I have the other versions of them that I can look back and be like, what did Jax do really well when they did this character? What did Hasbro do? What did Galoob do?
So as a collector, you're like giving yourself a reason to buy this figure again.
Right, yeah. Because it's like, I have this character and I have a certain amount of money. Like, why? And,
yes.
and unfortunately, it's like toy collecting, it's not a cheap hobby anymore. Like when I started, stuff was like $5. I mean, if you spent $10, you got like two figures. Now
right.
it's, you know, if you spend $20, you're lucky to get one. It's
right.
like this stuff has increased exponentially since I started collecting.
Which I guess is why you guys have to figure out how to affordably put in as much stuff into that $20 package.
Yeah, like that's my job, is to make sure that if someone's going to spend, you know, that money, I want them to have the best version that I can possibly make of that character.
Yeah.
And with the most stuff, you know, and the most meaningful stuff.
Do you get frustrated when you find out, through no fault of anybody's except what things cost, that you have to start shifting more towards plastic T-shirts and things like that as opposed to fabric, which I think in the beginning the fabric stuff that you guys were doing was what separated you?
Yeah.
And then when it goes to plastic, it's like, you know, I mean, what can you do? But
yeah, I try to use molded. I mean, there's sort of like the contra, like the whole quote unquote like the rubber shirts
mm-hmm.
It's like I try to use fabric where it's most appropriate because it is more expensive. Like for long flowing robes, like a Rick Rude style robe
mm-hmm.
where there's not a lot of frills or, you know, collar details or stuff.
Right.
I'll try to use the robe there because the construction on that is the point where we can, if the figure is not a high deco figure, we can probably meet the cost of the wave, the budget, you know, the target, and include that level of accessory.
Yeah.
But something with like a Goldust robe or an Asuka robe where it's a lot of kind of color changes and a lot of extraneous, you know, frills and ruffles. That's going to be very hard to execute in a soft good execution. We did that with a Gold Dust.
The classic Gold Dust is yeah. amazing, yeah.
Yeah, but like that's
but it's also more one straight just gold. It's
yeah.
it's the old
And he
robe,
also
yeah.
was that's a low deco version of Gold Dust. There yeah. wasn't a lot of color breaks on
oh,
it.
Oh yeah,
the time.
Yeah.
So we could since we're not spending the budget on that figure on the deco, we can have a little bit more for the accessory.
That makes sense.
But with someone like an Asuka, who's like color explosion on the figure to begin with, and then you have color explosion on the robe, and now the fur, and it's going to be, if I'm ever able to get a coat on her, like I'm not sure, you know, how I'm going to be able to afford all that on a figure and make it affordable. Like that figure is going to be a challenge.
Yeah, does it ever worry you that like an Asuka, for example,
mm-hmm.
Asuka's a smaller person,
yes.
like a human, which means the figure's going to be smaller.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of colors and paint and everything that's on her, plus you're going to put the mask in there, means that she's not going to have any big accessories with her,
yeah.
but it's still going to be this deluxe elite thing. Do you worry that because people don't understand the costs of what it takes to produce action figures, that they're going to look on a shelf, see a figure, this figure is smaller and has no accessories. This one, this big Roman Reigns figure, it's all black.
Yeah.
But it's this big guy who comes with a table and a chair and a ladder.
Yeah.
And it's these two cost the same.
You do worry about that, actually. You do worry about like a price value
yeah.
situation. I think a lot of our consumers are kind of savvy on what things cost. So if they see a high deco figure, they're going to go like, oh, it's more expensive to do that than someone, you know, just, you know, in like a Shield outfit where it's basically black below the,
right.
the neck.
Right. So what I was getting to before, when I was listing the guys that you guys had signed that were kind of big deals, has there been a point, or are you at a point now where you start to get worried that like there aren't any other big names to add to the line, so that we're not going to be able to go to Comic-Con and pull the sheet up and here's this big icon because we've got the icons. Like, do you worry that that fountain runs dry?
You do worry about that sometimes. You try to, maybe that's kind of why this year we've kind of done some of the more colorful characters.
Yeah.
So it's almost like, it's not like how big the name is, it's how, like, I can't believe that Mattel actually made that, but for a different reason. It's like, wow, I can't believe Mattel finally made a Razor Ramon. It's like, oh my God, Mattel made a shark?
Right. Well, so that's what I was going to ask you about, because I think I told you before when I saw you, that was my favorite thing out of everything that you guys showed off at Ringside Fest. Mm-hmm. Like, I could not believe that you were doing a shark. First, I want to talk about the Virgil figure, because it's right in the same line.
Yeah.
The Virgil figure I feel close to, because it comes with the autograph session sign.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm the creator of Lonely Virgil.
I did not know that.
.net.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the website with all the photos of Virgil. Yeah, that's my thing.
Oh, my God. I did not know that.
So when I find out, and I didn't find out until it was on, you know, Instagram or whatever, like you guys announced it, that Virgil was coming with the sign, part of me was like, oh, my God, this is my figure.
Like a proud father.
Like, I did this. I did this. But But the fact that that meme and that website, did that have a lot to do with it?
It had everything to do with it.
Yes. Yes.
It's funny because I think now Virgil is now known more for the Lonely Virgil persona and his Twitter.
Yeah.
And it's just more of a, like, the convention character than, and some people probably don't even realize he was ever on TV.
Right. He's just that guy.
It's Virgil. I mean, he's famous for a completely different reason now.
Now, when you're selling it to, I don't know who you would have to sell ideas to, whether it's Mattel or whether it's you're working with the retailers themselves. Mm-hmm. How do you convince someone, like, no, you've got to trust me. He's got to come with this sign that says Wrestling Superstar Virgil. Or do they just trust you at this point?
I have a lot of trust internally now with the company. I mean, I've been on the brand longer than anyone else that's been working on it now. And I think they trust that like I can kind of know my stuff, what I'm talking about. And if they don't understand it, it's like, well, if Bill says it'll sell, let's take him at his word.
Right.
Like, not all the time, but on stuff like this.
That's low risk.
Low risk and, like, collector focused.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, that's why we hired him. So let's.
How did the idea to do? Because I'm going, like, okay, I'm looking at my things and I go, I got Shockmaster, obviously. I found Isaac Yankum in a Toys R Us. I've already pre-ordered two Virgils. when I find and I'm going like, what's gonna be next? Duke the Dumpster Drossy does fit in that line.
Yeah.
But when I find out that the shark. Is the next figure in the line. That completely blew my mind. I did not see it coming even a little bit. Was that just like for you, were you like, there's never been a shark. I really want to do a shark. Or what is the process in creating John Tenta as the shark?
There was a marketing guy who...
And by the way, the figure's beautiful.
Yeah.
The paint is perfect. The headband's removable. It's got everything.
There was a marketing guy that used to work there that when we were coming up with, you know, ideas for this section of the line, he would always mention the shark. And it was like, it was so goofy. It's like, God, would people actually want the shark?
Yeah.
And then when you actually, like, look at the reference photos, and it's just, it's such an odd gimmick. I mean, everyone knows it's Earthquake.
Of everybody.
But then he covered up his tattoo with a shark tattoo.
And it's a legit tattoo.
Yeah. And painted and teeth on his face and did the shark attack fin. But and walk around going, shark attack.
That's why, to me, that's why the gimmick is so great, because John Tenta committed so much to it. Like, it's not his fault that it didn't work.
Yeah. It was like, I can't believe anyone thought that this was a good idea. But then in that line, there's like a lot of things. It's like, I can't believe anyone thought this was a good idea. Like, you know, Kane is a 7-foot-tall dentist.
Right. But also, I mean, when I looked at that shark figure, there was also something that, like, that's going to look cool on a shelf.
Right.
Like, there is going to be something to a kid. There's going to be something appealing about this oddball figure.
Yeah. With the oddball ones, we try to pick people and figures that are visually interesting.
Yeah.
That are different from
He's going to have special packaging and everything that's shark themed.
Yeah, there'll be some shark theming on the package.
That's awesome.
Some shark touches.
That's awesome.
We have another one coming out later this year that I think people are also going to be...
Any hints about the other one?
Oh, I can't drop any hints.
Can you tell me what promotion?
It's WWE in the 80s.
Okay. All right, that's good. That's more than...
Probably said more than I should have.
Right, that's a big
pretty
hint.
Wide net to...
I mean, in the 80s. That's where, like, you have a
everything
gold
was,
mine there.
Yeah.
I'm hoping for Akeem the African Dream, but in my head, I would think that that's probably not...
We actually put out an Akeem in the Legends line.
That's right, you did. Yeah. Of course you did. I have it. It's on my shelf already. So who am I hoping for then? 80s. I don't know. I love my Papa Shango, but that's 90s. I don't know. I'm going to be racking my brain about it, though, because it's probably that sort of Toys R Us exclusive, one-off, probably my favorite thing you guys are doing right now. That and the retro figures are, like, keeping me to the point where I don't think I will ever stop doing this. Is there anything that you guys or you really wanted to do that you didn't get to do? I know that sometimes, like, for instance, at Comic-Con, I've been there, and I know you guys showed off the Wrestling Buddies first.
Yeah.
And those were more just to gauge interest. Like, I know you guys showed off that, like, crazy detailed gobbledygooker figure. Are there things like that or other things that maybe we didn't even see that you wish you could have done that just for various reasons you just can't do?
Yeah, there's always stuff you work on. I've been lucky in that a lot of what I've worked on has actually reached market. Because sometimes that's not always the case. You can work on something and it can get to the point where it's like, you know, you're about to ship it and then, like, there, you know, something happens and then it's like, okay, we're walking away from this completely.
Yeah.
And I've been pretty lucky in that hasn't happened a lot in some instances in stuff I've worked on. There's been a few instances. One of them, actually, there was some figures that I developed that were supposed to come out like a year ago, mm-hmm. and then they didn't come out. So they were supposed to come out this year and then they still didn't come out. And so now they're tentatively scheduled to come out again next year.
Have we seen them?
You saw one of them yesterday.
I'll bet it was the Dude Love.
It was the Dude Love.
Yeah. Yes.
So,
but that's part of... So that Dude Love was sort of part of a line that just hasn't come out.
Yes.
I see.
It's so at some point, the rest of those will be out.
That's
so,
really interesting.
Yeah.
But the Dude Love is coming out.
The Dude Love is, as far as I know, it is there is a scheduled...
I mean, they let you show it, so at this point, it's, like, crazy if it doesn't come out.
Yeah, and honestly, it's one of those where if it doesn't come out as scheduled this year, we'll just push back to next year and find a spot for it again.
So yeah.
I think at this point, it's like, I know people want to get that Dude Love figure. We are going to get it, so you can...
How into this are the guys themselves, are the wrestlers themselves? I know, like, Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder.
They're very into, yeah.
Those guys, like, that's a whole different level. But, like, you know, just your average... average superstar.
I think everyone on the main roster now is full-timer, is into it, just based off of when I do the scanning sessions, mm-hmm. when we scan the face detail on it. Like, everyone's real enthusiastic about doing it, and, you know, they love the idea of getting their figures. I think for a lot of people, like, getting their first action figure is like a career milestone now. It's like, you know, every time we show someone's for a action figure for the first time on social media or something, like, they always comment on it and go nuts and say, like, how happy they are. So it's...
I spoke to Roderick Strong the day that you unveiled that fan. He didn't...
Yeah.
He didn't know it was coming or anything, but he was blown away. He was excited about it.
Yeah, like stuff like that. Yeah. Like, that's... I mean, that... And that's cool, because, I mean, I can only imagine, it's like you work hard, you know, at something that's, you know, physically demanding. It's a lot of work, and there's no guarantee of success. And then when you finally get to a point where, you know, you work for a company that has an agreement with, you know, a large toy company to make your action figures, it's like, you're like, God, I hope they get to me. I hope they get to me.
When you get, like, a Zack Ryder or a Curt Hawkins, who are really, like, kind of publicly obsessed with action mm-hmm. figures still, just like us, like, are you more motivated to make better figures for them because you know that they're legit collectors, or does it not? Or do you want to make them suffer because you know it really bugs them?
No, I want to get figures of everyone in the line, obviously, and a lot of it is, you know, dependent on TV time and storylines. And, you know, if I think that a year from now that there'll be the same amount of interest as there is now. And sometimes it's risky. Like, if someone isn't on TV all the time, you know, it's sort of more of a gamble to get them in a line. You can wind up in a situation where, you know, there's someone you commit to the figure, you tool it, you deco it. You release it, but in the interim, like 6 months into it, the guy is off TV, and then a month before the figure's supposed to hit, they're released from the company.
And it's then, like, what am I going to do?
And here? Then you have you're shipping, basically, at that point, you're shipping product that a lot of, even if the guy was like a huge, huge deal mm-hmm. in the 9 months leading up to it, it's almost like once you're off TV, you're out.
And you can see that.
Yeah.
Like, you can,
it definitely reflects in the sales. Yeah.
Wow. But so let's say somebody is on TV a lot, but they lose every match,
mm-hmm.
but they get promo time, but they lose every match.
Yeah.
Do you think that they're likely to get an elite figure?
If they're on TV losing,
Yeah. So
it's much better to lose on TV than to lose consistently than to lose, you know, off TV consistently and not have the televised.
I just personally think Curt Hawkins lends himself to an elite style, an elite style figure. What are you most excited about coming out? I would say this year, but we're already almost in November. So, like,
yeah.
Probably in 2018, what do you think is the coolest?
We have some NXT figures that I'm working on for later in the year. Like, I'm way too early to disclose.
Yeah.
But there's been some additions there that are very toyetic in their look.
Not the throwback ones, but the current NXT people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
actually I had a question about that. The heads on some of the second wave of the NXT figures.
Yes.
They look different than normal, and I can't really put my finger on it. Is the scanning process different? Like the Bobby Roode and the Authors of Pain figures. Mm-hmm. There's something about the way their faces look. Maybe it's just me.
I don't think on those in particular, but we are sort of experimenting with a new face printing process.
Okay.
It's most likely seen, I think the first examples that are shipping with it are the Elite 54 series Uso figures.
Oh,
which
okay.
have a new face printing process, which allows us to get more detail on the faces than tampo printing. You can get some of the little details that stamping one color isn't able to get you. And there's like some subtle shading and stuff. So when you look at them, it's almost like looking at their face, just shrunk down.
Right.
You know, it's too small. And so we're starting to implement that now. The goal is to have that completely implemented by the end of 2018.
Yeah.
So we're in the process of ramping that up. So that is something that going forward as we're always trying to improve our processes, both in terms of production to be able to get these things, you know, done, you know, less expensively so we can have more money to spend on the actual figure and then also improve the appearance because there's always, you know, there's a lot of other action figure companies putting out really good product right
sure,
now.
Sure, sure, yeah, definitely.
So it's not like you can rest on your laurels just because you have a strong brand with a strong TV presence. You also have to have strong product to put out there.
And I think I was talking to you before, but about the NXT line. Why I think it's getting so kind of spectacular and funny to me, but not fun, like funny in a good way, like funny in a, oh my God, that's hilarious, I have to get that, is the throwback figures. Like, it's one thing to have a throwback Roman Reigns. There would probably never be a throwback Roman Reigns, but there might be, depending, because Roman Reigns is such a big star. But the throwback Rusev to NXT Rusev, that nobody even really saw in big numbers. To see that and be like, oh my God, that's getting a figure. That's amazing.
I think that's my thought process behind that was almost like the shark, where it's like, I don't think people wanted that figure until they saw it. And then they were like, well, why wouldn't I not want this? It's Rusev.
And it comes with the board.
Yeah, he comes with the board he breaks. He's got like the brown entrance wrap. And then the underneath was like, I don't know what it was, but it was like the blonde brown
almost like gladiator looking.
Yeah, it was very distinct, and it looked like nothing else on the show.
Yeah.
So it's going to be one of those when it's on your shelf, that's going to look like nothing else on your shelf. So it'll stand out.
Are you happy with the ring so far? Are you guys at Mattel happy with the? Because I know that there were that's a big piece.
Yeah.
And it's been a long time since you guys put out a big $100 full size ring.
I'm happy with it. I don't know what the sales are on it yet, but I know I'm happy with it. I think the ring turned out great.
Yeah.
And of course, having an exclusive Goldberg with it is
that's got to be a big help.
That's going to help immensely. That's why we did the strategy of limiting Goldberg to the ring to make sure that we get as much attention and focus on a big item like that for this year.
Yeah, especially since Goldberg is one of these that is one of those like the last big.
Yeah,
guys that weren't on the license. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really amazing to me, like looking back, like all the people that I've been able to make figures of, and then like the amount of people, like big names that I haven't.
Bruno,
Yeah, I mean, I worked on a Bruno figure. Yeah. I mean, Kurt Angle, I'm working on that.
Yeah, Kurt Angle.
The Hardys, I worked on for like a little bit before, and then, you know, big gap, and then working on them again.
Yeah.
I mean, for someone who grew up like watching this stuff and then eventually, you know, collecting the stuff and displaying it. The fact that now it's like I get to determine like the future of my own collection. Like how many people can say they do that?
That's right. Yeah. And it's kind of awesome to have somebody working at Mattel in a position of, you know, I don't want to say power, but in a position to get things done.
Yeah.
that's a legit collector. Like, and it's clear to me, like, the Isaac Yankem figure, to me, that had the head thing and yeah. everything. Like, I'm like, this is a guy who just wanted to collect wrestling yeah, figures. Never, and it was like, that would be, that.
And there never was.
Cool
so
figure.
Even if you collected, you know, even if you're not, you don't want to dive in deep on Mattel, and I understand why, because it's, you know, it's not an inexpensive thing to do, but like, right. if you were just a regular action figure collector or a, you know, not brand loyal, but it's like, there's never been an Isaac Yankem.
Or dude, and I know, I guess I didn't sell as many because I see him at Toys R Us a lot, but I think the Shark will be the figure of 2018. My favorite figure of 2017 is Ringmaster Steve Austin.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think it's like, it's brilliant that you did it, because where would there ever be a Ringmaster figure? And it's perfect because there was actually, like, you could have gone lazy on that thing, right? Like, you could have used an existing head and just kind of left the goatee unpainted or whatever. Like, the fact that, or leave the tights black, because who cares? It's a Ringmaster. But the fact that there's, like, real detail put into a Ringmaster figure.
Yeah, I'm also very lucky that I work for a company that has tooling budgets that allow me to.
Yeah.
To sometimes go off on whims, and that, you know, and trust my judgment on doing that. That, you know, if he thinks it's worth, you know, tooling up a flashback, you know, Alexander Rusev figure.
And how long is the license with WWE?
I believe we just renewed it through at least 2021 or 2022.
I love it. The longer the better. It's great. Well, thanks for hanging out, man.
Thank you very much for having me. This is cool. I'm not gonna lie. I mean. Gosh, I wrestling podcasts help me get through my day, like, every day.
Well, yeah. Well,
and now I'm on one of the biggest. Like, this is unreal.
I appreciate it, man. And I'm a big fan of everything that you do. And one of these days, next time you're in town, maybe I get you to come out to Westchester so you can see. I'm just finishing up the home studio, but like, the wall of the home studio is all like metalled out.
That's really awesome. I was at a friend's Halloween party who's a collector, and like, he took me up to his room and showed me like. And it was like, it's stuff like that. I mean, I know we're wrapping up, but like, stuff like that, it's so flattering to see. I mean, it's really just, I'm incredibly grateful for everyone that has come up to me, you know, yesterday at ringside, and it says nice things about the figures, and then it has bought and, you know, supported the line throughout, you know, the years I've worked there. I really appreciate everything that, you know, that people, you know, that they spend money on the product. It's
cool.
It's cool.
Yeah. Well, excellent, man. We'll do this again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment, and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.